On April 20th, the last undocumented person who had been living in sanctuary in a church building in North Carolina went home at last. It had been a long 4 years for Juana Tober Ortega, who was also the first such case in that state. Joining me right now is the vicar of St. Barnabas Episcopal Church, which sheltered her for all of this time, the Reverend Randall Keeney. Randall, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you very much.
What a powerful journey this must have been for you and your small congregation. How did you first get involved in the sanctuary movement?
Well, we had developed a relationship with a young man and his family from El Salvador and had considered offering him sanctuary. But as his wife and child had the opportunity to apply for asylum, so he chose to be publicly supportive of them and testify in court on their behalf. And as soon as he did, he was, of course, detained by ICE and spent about 2 years in detention. But his wife and son received asylum. So he didn't end up needing sanctuary. But we continued a relationship with a Quaker social justice group called the American Friends Service Committee. Mm-hmm. And they became aware of Juana and her plight, and they brought her to our attention.
What networks did you engage with in doing this work, either within your denomination or an interfaith basis? What was going on? How were you doing it?
Well, in the beginning, we were sort of on our own because it wasn't being done, in North Carolina, at least. So we were pretty much on our own trying to discern what we should do. After Juana was in sanctuary, other groups came to be supportive. The North Carolina Council of Churches has been wonderful in their support of not only Juana, but others that were in sanctuary in North Carolina. Of course, the American Friends Service Committee continued to be supportive of her and her presence in sanctuary after she came. And luckily there were folks on the League of Women Voters who ended up forming an immigration subcommittee that began to be very supportive of her and our work with her.
Randall, what do we need to know about Juana and the years that she spent in your sanctuary?
Well, Juana, and using this word in its best and deepest way, is a profoundly graceful woman. She's highly aware of her God, of God and her relationship with God. She was and remained a central member of a Pentecostal church in Asheboro, and her faith has been a part of her life since she was a child. In fact, she would tell you that her faith and God are what got her through all of these things. She's also extremely strong. While at the same time being very humble. There's a quiet strength about Juana that that inspired all of us. Juana was the mother of two in Guatemala when rebels came to their village and demanded that she join their group and help them in their work and come out into the jungle and live with them. And she had two daughters, and it was made known to her that if she did not come, that they would kill her. So her parents basically packed her up and sent her to the United States. And they cared for her two daughters. And Juana came here and tried to build a life so she could eventually bring her children here, which she was able to do. And they eventually became DACA recipients. Then she married and continued her family and had two more children and grandchildren, and was working and paying taxes and reporting to ICE on a yearly basis. It's just that in, I think, April of 2017, when she reported to the ICE office, they put an ankle monitor on her and told her she had 30 days to leave the country. So that led her to seek help and refuge.
How did this ordeal affect her family?
Oh, my goodness. Just the loss of her presence in the household on a daily basis. The ability to, you know, hug your children, say their prayers at night, talk with them about their struggles at school, you know, in a more natural, regular way. You know, they're, you know, the supporting them and the building up of their families and search out of their careers and vocations. They came to see her quite a bit, but it's not the same as being in your own home and being able to sit around your kitchen table and talk about it and to talk about these things with your family.
How did this impact your congregation?
Well, for the overwhelming majority of the congregation, I would say 90%. Juana basically enfleshed the call in Scripture to welcome the alien, to offer respite and hospitality to those that are in need. About, 10% or so of people really struggled with it politically, and we lost two or three families over it. We're small, so two or three families is 10% of us. So the congregation jumped right in and began, you know, staying with her 24 hours a day to make sure that if ICE came, she did not have to answer the door herself. We had emergency contacts and procedures in place in case immigration came to try to arrest her. And for at least until the COVID outbreak really kicked in, our folks plus other volunteers in the community were here with her 24 hours a day.
Well, I was going to ask you that because I wondered beyond the congregation if the community itself got involved in helping Juana.
Yeah, they did. We had people from several places, from the Quakers here in Greensboro, which is a large, wonderful group of people. We had people from the Roman Catholic Church just up the road that were coming. We had people sending food and trying to take care of her. Food was something Juana really didn't need because she can cook like, oh my goodness, it's amazing. our own diocese, the Episcopal Diocese of North Carolina, was extremely supportive financially and prayerfully and otherwise. There was a UCC church here in Greensboro who took someone into sanctuary. shortly after we did, and there was support there. So we did not lack for support.
Mm-hmm. Randall, what you just you alone? What did you learn from this experience?
One of the things I suppose is that if you're willing to go out on a limb and you have good reasons, good foundation, good theological, social, and justice, and issues around justice supporting it, and you can articulate that, and then it's personified by someone like Juana, a human being, where immigration is not just an issue, or something is not just an issue, it's personified, mm-hmm. then people will begin to understand the struggles that certain communities and groups of people go through. Mm-hmm. It's sort of those personal relationships that eyes are opened and people begin to see the profound suffering of groups of people and the individual persons within those groups.
Mm-hmm. As you well know, a lot of activists are concerned that immigration policy is not being legislated, but is instead being enacted by executive order. Are you engaged in longer term activism around this issue?
I have been in the past. The sanctuary and things around it have sort of sort of occupied time. So I haven't been, and particularly over the last year or so with the COVID crisis, I haven't been as involved with the groups that are out there doing social mm-hmm. justice work as I would like to be, mm-hmm. but will be again in the future. It's disheartening, frustrating, and on occasion gut-wrenching. To watch our elected officials avoid this issue and refuse mm-hmm. to engage it and continue to use immigrants as political footballs and mm-hmm. straw men and the other that they can, vilify. Mm-hmm. So it is profoundly frustrating.
I'm sure.
To watch the gyrations and contortions that some politicians will go through to avoid really doing something about the tragedy that is the American immigration system.
Randall, what would you want every American of goodwill to know about the toll exclusionary policies take on families and on communities as a whole?
Well, it goes from the most extreme, families burying their members because they can't immigrate, and hunger, disease, violence, civil war ends up taking their very lives before they can, because they cannot leave. To the folks that die on the journey here because it has to be done, it's so secretly and people end up trying to go through the desert to get here and starve or thirst to death. Mm. People dying in rivers, and once they get here, the trauma of knowing that at any moment they could be detained,
and could be deported. Mm-hmm. Children are living with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, even traumatic distress disorder, mm-hmm. Where they can't sleep. They're afraid to go to school. Parents are afraid to work. They get pushed to the darker edges of our society and victimized by people. It's a profound suffering. And the majority of folks that are in the United States, without papers, which the United States used to welcome people and then provide their papers. Now we refuse to give them, quote, papers. Mm-hmm. The majority of the folks here are folks that overstayed their visas. Mm-hmm. But the folks that are suffering the most are those who are coming trying to escape violence and poverty. So it is a dark shadow covering entire families and individuals, children and adults. Mm-hmm.
The Reverend Randall Keeney is vicar at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church in Greensboro, North Carolina. After being the first church to offer sanctuary to an undocumented immigrant threatened with deportation 4 years ago, the congregation was the last to see that same person finally leave the building earlier this month, the last such resident in the state to do so. Randall, I so admire what you have done and what you have shared with us. I'm so grateful for your sharing this experience, this message, this teaching. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. And I thank you for your work and for carrying, being willing to bring these messages to people's attention. Keep it up.